Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today, we're looking into something quite specific. Why villages were emptying out in the Afrin region, that's in northwestern Syria, before 2010. The sources you've shared, they really paint a picture of, a complex situation, long before the Syrian civil war that most people know about. We'll be digging into the history, government actions, economic stuff, and even environmental issues that played a part. The idea is to sort of unpack all these threads and understand why these rural communities in a place historically Kurdish were already in decline.
Yeah, and to really get it, you need to picture Afrin itself. It's also known historically and culturally as Kurdak. That means Mountain of the Kurds. It's a fertile place, mountains right up against the Turkish border. And for centuries, it's been, you know, overwhelmingly Kurdish. Before 2011, the estimates for the Kurdish population were somewhere between, say, 75% and maybe even over 97%. It's a really deep history. Even Ottoman documents called it the Sancak of the Kurds. That was like an administrative area highlighting just how long it's been identified as Kurdish.
So predominantly Kurdish, but not entirely. There were other groups too.
That's right, yeah. Alongside the Kurds, you had Arab communities, Armenians, some Turkmen as well. And religion-wise, mostly Sunni Islam, yes, but also important communities of Alevi Kurds, mainly around Mabatli and Yazidi Kurds, particularly in places like Shiran and Sheirawa, and some Christians too. So
right.
Diverse, but within that clear Kurdish context.
Okay. And what was life like in those villages, say, before things started changing so drastically? What did people do?
Well, life really revolved around farming. Agriculture was absolutely central, especially olives, huge numbers of olive trees, maybe 14 million, they estimate. Olive oil was key. Wheat was also very important. Actually, before 2011, something like 3/4 of the people in Afrin were involved in agriculture. Land ownership itself, that had its own story. It went from these big landowners, the Agawat, you know, traditional elites, to later state land reforms.
Right, so a deeply agricultural society at its core. But you mentioned a shift, people moving.
Yes, that's a really noticeable trend. Even way before 2010, Afrin City, the main town, was growing. And that growth was mostly people coming in from the villages around it. This started way back, maybe the 1960s. The city's population, it like more than doubled between the early 80s and 2009. So that tells you people were already leaving the countryside for various reasons, long before the war. The whole Afrin district had, let's see, about 172,000 people in the 2004 census. Some later numbers are bigger, but they might be counting differently or include early displacements. Mm. But for what we're talking about, the key thing is that rural to urban drift was already happening.
And this is where the sources really point towards government policies playing a big role. What can you tell us about that side of things?
Oh, absolutely. State policies on land, on demographics, they got a massive impact. Take the 1958 Agrarian Reform Law. Now, officially, the goal was land redistribution, taking it from so-called feudal lords. But in practice, particularly in Kurdish areas like Afrin, it hit Kurdish landowners much harder than others. Thousands and thousands of hectares were taken, expropriated. So you have to ask, was it just about land reform, or was it also, maybe subtly, about changing the population balance in this Kurdish area decades before things really blew up?
And that land, where did it go? Who got it?
Well, often it was given to Arab families, families brought in from other parts of Syria, like from east of Aleppo or near Menbi. They were settled in Afrin. They even built new settlements for them, for instance, along the Afrin River down in the Genderis area.
Yeah, okay. That sounds less like reform and more like, well, engineering a population.
It certainly looks that way from the examples. Take Memedi Sharki, a village in Genderis. It used to be Kurdish and Armenian families living there after the reform. Completely repopulated. The new Arab farming families moved in. None of the original people stayed. Then there's Filik, also Genderis. Its original people left in the 70s after the reform. Now, it's just farmland. Nobody lives there. Even the farmlands around Burj Kamush, same area, were carved up and redistributed.
Those are really stark examples. And it wasn't just that one law from the 50s, was it? This continued.
No, definitely not. Much later, in 2008, there was Decree 49. On paper, it was about regulating property near the borders. Makes sense, maybe. But lots of people saw it as another way to push people out, especially the Kurdish minority. Afrin, being right on the border, was hit hard. This decree made it incredibly difficult for homeowners, especially Kurds, to get official property deeds, the green taboo, they called it. It created this huge sense of insecurity. You might live there, your family might have lived there for generations, but proving you legally owned it. Suddenly, very hard.
Right. That would make anyone feel vulnerable, I imagine, living with that uncertainty.
Exactly. And this wasn't happening in a vacuum. It was part of broader policies, sort of Arabization efforts and longstanding discrimination. There was a UN report way back in 71, that talked about Syrian policies depriving Kurds of basic rights. Things like exclusion from politics, the economy, social life, culture, restrictions on using the Kurdish language, even denying citizenship to many Kurds, especially after that controversial 1962 census in the Jazeera region, and limits on owning property, getting education, pursuing careers. All of it added up.
Even if Afrin didn't get those really overt Arab Belt campaigns that happened elsewhere.
Correct. It was maybe less overt in Afrin compared to Jazeera, for example. But the general discrimination, combined with these specific land policies, it created this pressure cooker. It made rural life seem more and more precarious, pushing people towards cities, especially when other things, like drought, hit, which happened in the late 90s, too.
So it feels like these weren't just abstract rules on paper. They directly impacted people's decisions about staying or leaving.
Absolutely. And then layered on top of that is the whole issue of governance and development, or maybe the lack of development in rural Afrin.
How did that feed into people leaving, the lack of development?
Well, the sources suggest the Ba'athist regime kind of systematically neglected Afrin, marginalized it, which meant poor socioeconomic conditions in the villages, a real lack of investment in basic stuff, reliable water, electricity, decent schools, healthcare. We don't have super specific village by village stats for before 2010, but the general picture across Syria was that rural areas lagged way behind cities. It seems Afrin was definitely part of that pattern.
The kind of basic services you need to keep a community vibrant and make people want to stay.
Exactly. And even a Syrian government document, though it wasn't just about Afrin pre-2010, acknowledged this problem nationally. Rural poverty, unemployment, need for better services, the fact that students from Afrin who wanted to go to university usually had to travel to Aleppo. That tells you something about the lack of local higher education options, another consequence.
So what were the knock-on effects of that neglect in the villages themselves?
Well, lower living standards, obviously, limited access to good education and health care, big pushes for families to move to cities. It weakened the agricultural sector, too, because there wasn't enough investment in modern irrigation or decent rural roads or support services for farmers. And it just made these communities more vulnerable when shocks hit, whether economic problems or environmental ones, like drought. It chipped away at their resilience.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbrosh, Hannah. You know, today's chai has a bit of a bitter edge to it. Definitely needs a touch more sugar to balance it out. But still, a welcome break. Let's take a moment. All right, back to our examination. So we've got state policies, we've got neglect. What about the basic economics, the socioeconomic drivers pushing people out?
Right. Well, the farming economy itself, it was pretty vulnerable. Like we said, so much depended on just a few things, olives, olive oil, wheat. That meant villages were really exposed to price swings in the market or bad weather years or just unhelpful government farm policies.
Yeah, putting all your eggs in one basket, essentially. If that basket has a problem, everyone feels it.
Pretty much. And outside of farming, there just weren't many other jobs available in most villages. Very limited options. So younger people or anyone wanting a different kind of career, they often had to leave. Go to Afrin City or Aleppo, Damascus, maybe even abroad.
A real lack of economic diversity in the countryside.
Exactly. And then you have national economic policies layered on top. Syria was gradually moving towards a more market-based system, especially from the 2000s under Bashar al-Assad. But the benefits weren't spread evenly. Often, people connected to the regime did well, but others didn't. Things like cutting subsidies on fuel and food, getting rid of price controls for farm goods that really squeezed rural households.
Made it harder and harder for village families just to make ends meet.
Yes. And government budgets often prioritize day-to-day spending over long-term investment in rural areas. So you put all that together, vulnerable farming, few other jobs, rising costs, lack of investment. It led to real economic hardship and poverty. Yeah. Migration then becomes, well, a coping strategy, a way to find income, find a better life. And this probably led to that hollowing out effect. The most economically active people, the educated people, they leave.
Yeah.
And that weakens the village even more.
And then came that huge environmental shock you mentioned earlier, the drought.
Yeah, that drought from roughly 2006 to 2010, maybe into 2011. It was a massive deal.
Yeah.
One of the worst in Syria's modern history, they say. Rainfall just plummeted. Temperatures shot up. Widespread crop failures. Wheat production dropped so much Syria had to start importing it. Think about that. Livestock. Devastated. Some farmers lost like 80% of their animals. It was a critical blow piling onto all those existing problems.
Absolutely devastating for a region so dependent on farming and herding.
Totally. And the knock-on effects were dire across Syria, but especially in rural places like Afrin. hundreds of thousands of people lost their livelihoods, mostly farmers. Food prices went way up. Food insecurity, malnutrition. It got bad. Kids were dropping out of school more because families just couldn't manage.
Yeah.
And it triggered this huge wave of internal migration. People leaving the countryside for the cities. Estimates go up to maybe 1.5 million people moving nationally. And Afrin's villages were definitely part of that outflow. The drought really acted as an accelerant on everything else that was already stressing the system.
And it wasn't just the lack of rain, right? There were underlying issues that made the drought's impact worse.
No, exactly. Its impact was much worse because of long-term problems with how water was managed, how resources were used. For years, there have been these unsustainable farming policies pushing for high production, farming on unsuitable land. That led to too much groundwater being pumped out. Plus, not enough investment in modern, efficient irrigation. People relied on older methods. High fuel costs for pumping water didn't help. Sometimes illegal wells were drilled, water pumps and systems were often old and breaking down. So this whole legacy of mismanagement meant the farming system and the communities depending on it were already weakened. They just didn't have the resilience to cope when such a severe drought hit.
Okay, so putting all these pieces together, the politics, the economics, the neglect, the drought, what did this village abandonment actually look like before 2010?
Well, you see these clear long-term patterns. People moving from villages to Afrin City that had been happening for decades since the 60s, also moving to Aleppo, Damascus, even leaving Syria altogether, driven by all those things we talked about, lack of jobs, poverty, trying to get better education or healthcare. And then the 2006-2010 drought, it just massively sped everything up. Aleppo especially saw a big influx of people from rural areas then.
Were there specific villages that basically emptied out or were totally abandoned even before 2010?
Yes, we have those concrete examples from the sources. Mehdi Yasharki in Jandora's total population replacement after the 58 land reform.
Yeah.
The original people gone. Felik, also Jandora's, completely abandoned in the 70s because of that same reform. Still just farmland today. Burj Kamush, again, Jandora's maybe not totally abandoned, but severely disrupted when its farmland was redistributed after 58. There are even older cases, like Ankoil and Sheikh Hadid, abandoned way back in the early 20th century.
Yeah.
Or Pelusonk in Shiran, which nearly died out in the 60s after its leader, the Aga, passed away. Only a few people came back later.
So it's a mix then. Some places experienced sudden policy-driven displacement, while others saw more of a gradual draining away of people.
Exactly. You can sort of map out the push factors driving people away from the villages. The land confiscations, the property insecurity from Decree 49, the state neglect, the lack of services, the poverty, the limited jobs, the feeling agriculture due to drought and mismanagement, and that general feeling of discrimination. And then the pull factors drawing them towards cities or abroad. Better job prospects, better schools and hospitals, maybe feeling safer or more anonymous in a city, plus existing family or community networks already there. A lot of the pre-2010 emptying out seems like that slow, steady decline, what you might call silent abandonment. Though obviously things like the agrarian reform caused much more immediate, forceful displacement in some spots. The growth of Afrin City itself really reflects this long, slow bleed from the countryside. And the drought just hit the accelerator hard on those existing trends.
What we've really seen today is that this story, the abandonment of villages in Afrin before 2010, it's incredibly layered. It's this complex weave of political choices, economic pressures, environmental forces, just all tangled together.
Yeah, it wasn't one single thing, one single moment.
Yeah.
It was this slow, unfolding process, although with those sharp shocks like the land reform,
mm-hmm.
and the combined weight of all these factors just left these rural communities really vulnerable, even before the massive upheavals that came after 2010. It really makes you consider how decisions made decades ago, how long-term neglect, how climate change, how all these seemingly distant things can drastically shape the future of a place and the lives of the people there. You know, what does it actually mean for a community's ability to survive, to bounce back when it's hit by so many different pressures over such a long time? That's definitely something worth thinking about long after we finish talking today.